The new school year always brings change with it for students, a change of classrooms, material to learn, expectations to strive for, lunches to trade, and all that fun stuff. For the educators and administrators, the new year brings change to the financial element and structure of the education system. Here to talk about some of these issues is the executive director of the New Jersey Association of School Administrators, Dr. Richard Bozzi. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
NJASA.net is their spot on the web, NJASA.net. And, you know, when you think of education, I guess nowadays, you think about the budgets and the money first. And, you know, last couple of years, we saw the 2% cap come into play. Has all the dust from that settled, or are there still financial intangibles that this 2014-2015 school year is going to be forced to face?
Well, a lot of the dust is settled, given that we have the 2% tax levy cap, and that eliminates the public budget vote unless the voters wish to exceed that, and then the vote would be put in place. But there are a number of things on the state level that really make it perhaps an unsettled year, as it was the first year of the Christie administration, when he was dealing with the financial crisis and took away quite a bit of funding from schools. And what are some of those things? Well, in 2008, there was a lawsuit brought by a number of districts, small rural districts in southern New Jersey, 20 of them, and they were called the Bacon Districts based on the plaintiff in the case, where they said, hey, we're a lot like the large urban districts, or as they were known in the past, the Abbott Districts, in the sense of that we have a lot of poverty, we have a lot of issues to face, and that we need additional funding over that which we are receiving. And the court agreed with them. What intervened in between was a new funding formula in 2009 that was supposed to address this based on the needs of the students in the school district. However, it's never been funded, and it has never been funded fully. And now those districts are headed back to court to say, hey, the court said we should have resources that the state has not provided. So there is a question of then where does that money come from? In addition, you've got several lawsuits out there that could affect the budget. In the past year, we've had concerns with regard to the funding of the public employee pension system. And in fact, the governor withheld right at the end of the school year over $900 million from that funding in order to balance the budget. That was challenged legally, and the judge said, hey, you know, there's no place else to go. It's the end of the year, and so therefore, I'm going to support what the governor did from a legal vantage point. But now employee unions are saying, hey, you can't do that again in the new year. There are other avenues you can take, and that could potentially impact $1.5 billion in this year's budget. And again, if that were required to be paid, what's the impact potentially on school district budgets? So we've got a number of things that are out there, in addition to some costs concerns with regard to the special education costs that are rising faster than budgets can handle, and looking down the road to say, could this be another precarious year where districts lose money before the year's over?
You know, with all those cost concerns in mind, and again, the budgetary intangibles that you mentioned, is that why this concept of, when we talk about shared services, we usually talk about local police, fire departments, things like that, it's actually an idea that can be applied to schools now, too?
Very much so. Now, schools have done quite a bit of that, but the question is, what else can they do? And there's a bigger question now. We see an example in Hunterdon County where three districts that were sending to the high school district have now come together to form one district. And so that issue is now being looked at countywide with regard to Hunterdon County, where the Board of Chosen Freeholders there have said to all school districts, please take a look and see if you can do something similar. Now, statewide, that's a difficult thing to do, for example, because it always depends upon the tax inequities in communities. In this Hunterdon County case, these districts pretty much look the same as one another from a financial viewpoint. And if that's not the case, if you attempt to consolidate school districts, one community always winds up paying more taxes and will invariably say, no, we're going to vote that idea down because we don't want to pick up more of the cost than we already pay. So that's a problem from a structural viewpoint. But taking a look at shared services is going to continue to be a very important factor. As I said, while there's been a lot that has been done among school districts, but particularly among the communities, the government, community governments, and the school districts where they reside, we're going to have to continue to look at what else might we do, especially when we're looking at costs that may be rising above the 2% that is allowable to raise the budget.
Talking with Dr. Richard Bozzi, Executive Director of the New Jersey Association of School Administrators, NJASA.net on the web. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Combine that with the fact of how special ed class costs are rising, one would assume because of additional student bodies in those classes. But that idea of shared services, then, does that put a school, whether it be fairly or unfairly, best equipped to handle those specific needs at the head of the line when it comes to determining where to drop in the shared services?
Well, this is a concern that has been raised for a number of years, but is really reaching new heights. There is a state task force that is examining this now based on a legislative requirement. And what's happening is, yes, we're seeing the number of students who are classified as saying we need special services for those students, as well as the cost of those services rising. And that becomes a particular problem in small school districts. For example, if they receive a student that has a very costly placement that can't be handled within district, it has to be placed outside of the district. So this is not an issue of not wanting to provide services to kids who have special needs, but trying to meet the challenge of, how do we do this all, and when it takes more away from the regular education program, what is it that we can do? And so I think during the year ahead, you're going to see a very brisk discussion on this topic and a look at what might we do better. And shared services might be one of those routes in which school districts come together. And we do have, in most counties, services like educational service commissions and special school districts. Others are called jointure commissions, where they come together, districts come together to try to provide services to students with special needs at a more economic manner. So watch for that to be a big discussion in the months ahead.
School security typically is thought of for the urban school districts, but as we talked about here on the show, we have a school in rural New Jersey, High Point Regional High School in Sussex County, which hired armed security officers, former state troopers, well-trained. So the safety factor of the safety program is certainly has its safeguards on it. But as far as for school security, do you think that the schools are just, you know, like Sandy Hook, if we can go down the list of all the tragedies around the nation, around the world with schools and where evil invades, that schools are finally got to the point where we're tired of trying to recover and react? We want to be proactive and throw out the unwelcome mat for anyone who wants to do evil.
Well, I absolutely think that schools are even safer now than they've ever been, and statistically the safest place over many years for students to be. But the tragedies that you reference really bring to the forefront the conversation about what else can we do differently. And so that conversation about having police officers or armed guards in the schools is one that many districts are having. And as you noted in High Point, having concerns about whether or not there was sufficient response time from state police, for example, leads to schools to make certain decisions. Again, that's one that is at the forefront, making certain that, or as certain as we can be, that students are as secure and safe as they possibly can be within the school environment. And now, I think one of the things that we like to remind parents is we know that schools are generally pretty open environments in spite of these security measures. And, you know, the one way to examine that is to say, look, at lunchtime, kids are on the playground or they're on the athletic fields during the day, or in the evening they're in the gymnasiums. And so it's not as though we have an armed encampment here. We still have to work to bring this balance to how do we maintain an open and supportive educational environment while looking at these issues of security. And so that's a conversation that continues. It certainly was very much heightened nearly 2 years ago with the Sandy Hook Elementary School tragedy, and that conversation continues. And so we want to see what else can we do. And I think technology will offer some assistance as we go forward here as well.
Well, certainly in the newer schools, for example, it's almost like trying to go into the subway in New York City. You have the swipe cards instead of padlocked doors, although some doors in the more risky school districts do have locked doors from the inside so that people just can't wander in, which sounds, you know, a little odd versus when most of us grew up. Every door of every school used to be open, but again, it's a different world these days. So again, it's just really important, especially with High Point Regional, there isn't a risk that was bearing down on schools that are implementing armed security, but it's just a matter of getting ahead of the evil as opposed to, again, reacting.
Yes,
I
think most people are confident that there's not one simple solution here, and I think alertness in terms of training of staff and students, taking the measures that we require for people to identify themselves before they come into the building. But, you know, we know the bad guys don't necessarily, they don't follow the rules. And so, you know, we have to be ever vigilant. We don't want to let our guard down, but again, we want to maintain that balance of the school should be a supportive environment for kids. And I think that's the challenge that we face.
Learn more about the education process, its various elements, and the issues are the focus of the New Jersey Association of School Administrators. That's among the information available at their website, njasa.net. Again, it's njasa.net. And we've been joined this morning by their executive director, Dr. Richard Bazza. Richard, as always, in education, thanks for being here this morning.
Pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.